Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Russian America by Stoney Compton, narrated by Kurt Bonham. Maps. 1. Clarence Strait, Russian America, July 1987. Etolin Island lay to starboard, and Prince of Wales Island stood fine on the horizon to port. All 30 meters of Pravda tossed like a cork in a pond. The graying seas broke into spraying foam at 2 meters, and the wind shrilled warning. Charter Captain Grigory Grigorievich couldn't drop anchor here, nor could he just abandon the wheel and go below to mediate what was sure to turn into rape at the very least. Both passengers were below in the main cabin. He popped open the hidden compartment on the console and poked the tiny phone into his ear so quickly he hurt himself.
"No,"
Valerie said.
"You will do this with me for 2 reasons, Karpov said, sounding like a schoolteacher. "First, it will give us both comfort in this storm. Secondly, if you don't do it willingly, I will beat you and take you by force. This is inevitable. Besides, you used to enjoy me."
"I was lying, you swine!" she shrieked.
An oddly familiar thonk came over the phone, and Grisha realized that someone had just been hit with a bottle. A large mass fell on the deck. He smiled and put the earphone away. Valerie was beginning to appeal to him. She raged up the steps, clutching the vodka bottle by its neck. Throwing it over the side, she grabbed the railing, braced herself on the heaving deck, and shouted at him,
"I wish to make a formal protest to be entered in the log."
He gestured with his chin as he clutched the wheel with both hands.
"It's right up there," he yelled over the building wind. "Make the entry yourself."
"But you're the captain."
"Do you want to take over?"
Hanging onto the railing with both hands, she finally took in the sea around them. Huge swells of slate-colored water veined with submerged foam like fat in a rich man's steak roiled up around them, rising and dropping with unimaginable hydraulic force. Wind ripped loose foam off wave tops and hurled it at the boat, where it smacked the hull and topsides like thrown sand. Pravda rolled heavily from side to side and pitched up and down as she struggled from one wave to the next. Prince of Wales Island now lay behind a seamless wall of driving water and impenetrable cloud.
"By the saints, no," she said,
nearly inaudible, swaying with the dance of the boat. She raised her voice.
"Are we going to get out of this?"
Water sluiced across the deck and gurgled into the scuppers as the boat labored through the shrieking elements.
"Of course!"
He forced himself to smile and licked salt spray from his lips.
"You don't lie very well. Tell me the truth."
"We're not far from Fort Dionysus. If the storm doesn't get any worse, we will make it easily."
"And if the storm gets worse?"
He shrugged.
"Figure it out for yourself. We won't make it."
"Shit! This was such a stupid idea. Now we're all going to die. If I get out of this, I'm going to get a new job."
"Why are you here?"
Grisha shouted to be heard over the storm. She gave him a level look and smiled.
"Don't worry your pretty little head about it. The less you know, the better off you'll be."
Grisha repressed the flare of anger. Suddenly, Karpov, blood streaming down the side of his head, erupted out of the companionway, slid across the soaking deck on his knees, and tackled Valerie. She screamed and pounded his head with her fists.
"What are you doing, you ass?"
she screamed at him.
"Have you lost your mind?"
Still on his knees, the beefy man gripped her shirt with one hand, slapped her face with the other. Blood arced from her cut lip. The small sound from deep in her throat jerked open Grisha's gut anger. Holding the wheel with one hand, he turned and snap-kicked Karpov as hard as he could in the side of the head. Still clutching Valerie, Karpov flew backward, and his head smashed into the fishing gear compartment. The door to the locker swung open as he flopped on the deck, spasming as he tried to retain consciousness. Valerie squirmed out from under Karpov's twitching mass.
"Thank you, Captain Grisha. I think he would have really hurt me this time."
She staggered across the shifting deck and hugged him fiercely. He put one arm around her.
"I owe you for that one," she said.
With a gasp, she was wrenched out of his grasp and flung across the bridge deck by a seething Karpov. The large man didn't even look back at the woman. He stood glaring at Grisha, rain and blood running down his face as bruises and lumps purpled and thickened.
"I relieve you of command,"
he said with a growl, and swung his massive fist at Grisha's face. Grisha released the wheel, ducked under the swing, and put all of his weight behind a two-fisted uppercut to Karpov's solar plexus. Air woofed out of the larger man, and he staggered back three steps. Grisha kicked him in the crotch as hard as he could. Karpov doubled over with a moan and fell heavily. Grisha grabbed the spinning wheel and gave his attention to straightening the boat, which had immediately turned broadside to the wind. Pravda lurched sideways off a wave top and slid to the bottom of the trough with a crash. He felt thankful the boat hadn't rolled down the liquid incline. Seawater crashed into the open bridge, soaking it and everyone on it. Gear spilled out of the fishing locker and slid around the deck. On the other side of the bridge, Valerie pulled herself to her feet and clung to the railing, shivering. Karpov shook his head and swung from the deck to bury his fist in Grisha's stomach, smashing him against the bulkhead and knocking him breathless. Grisha slid down on the deck, gasping. The boat again put beam to the wind and rolled heavily to starboard, hanging for an impossibly long time before rolling back to port. More seawater inundated them. The bridge deck swirled with the increasing water the scuppers couldn't handle.
"Wheel!"
Grisha gasped.
"Get the wheel!"
Karpov threw himself on Grisha and hit him with three hammering blows. The vessel lurched in the moaning gale and crunched into a trough. Crockery shattered in the galley, and Grisha twisted his body and threw Karpov off him. He rolled over and pushed himself up, trying to hit Karpov, but couldn't find a target the few times he could put any strength behind his fist. Valerie grabbed the wheel and turned it back and forth uselessly.
"Into the wind!"
he screamed.
"Turn into the wheel!"
Karpov's fist drove the oxygen from his lungs again. Grisha crashed back on the deck. The heavy man straddled him and began choking him with both hands. Grisha stared at the hate-filled eyes in the bloody face. He dimly realized this was the first fight he'd been in since he got married. He felt his windpipe crackle, and he knew he was going to die very soon. The lack of air became more pressing than the pain. He tried to struggle, but his arms lacked strength, pinned under the Russian's massive weight. Spots swam redly before his eyes. Karpov lurched violently. His jaw dropped open, and his eyes lost focus. The terrible crushing at Grisha's throat eased as the man collapsed on him. The medicinal scent of vodka mingled with his last shuddering breath. Karpov suddenly rolled off Grisha and flopped on the deck, arms flung wide, and slid to the back of the boat in the quarter meter of water running across the deck. Valerie pulled back the foot she had used to push Karpov's corpse and stood braced against the console. Blood and rain dripped off the steel spike on the halibut club in her hands.
"Get up and drive this goddamn thing!"
she screamed, waving the club. Even though Grisha felt like lying there and going to sleep, he rolled over and dragged himself up to the captain's chair bolted to the deck. Pravda rolled heavily to starboard again, and he grasped the wheel, turning to follow the roll, praying the tiller would grab enough water to keep from completely rolling over. Seawater seeped over the starboard gunwale as the boat pushed into multiple tons of brine. Pravda edged slowly into the keening wind, the laboring diesel barely audible, and slowly, reluctantly, creaked back to port. His head and throat ached. Every breath felt like fire. The spots dancing in front of his eyes gradually evolved into raindrops.
"This isn't good weather for fishing," he said in a croak and shook his head.
He pointed the bow into the wind and increased the throttle. Pravda surged against the storm and slowly made headway. He estimated the waves to be 10 meters from trough to top. Valerie huddled against the far bulkhead, braced and sobbing.
"What are we going to do?"
They were both soaked to the skin. The ocean temperature rarely warmed more than 8 or 10 degrees above freezing. With the squall blowing in excess of 50 knots, they both were in the depths of hypothermia.
"We're going to live,"
he said roughly, wincing at the pain in his throat.
"We beat him, we can beat the storm."
"I'm so cold,"
she wailed.
"Go below. First locker on your right. Coats, bring me one too."
The few minutes she took seemed like hours to him. She reemerged, bundled in a coat too large for her, and handed him a foul weather jacket. He shrugged into the dry coat and knew he was going to be all right.
"We must get rid of that,"
she said, nodding toward Karpov's bloody body. She was all business again, the tears gone, but teeth still chattering.
But how?
"Why do we have to get rid of him?"
"You fool! We've killed one of the Tsar's Cossacks! The Okhana will hang us both for that!"
"Find something heavy," he said. "Tie it to him. Once we're out of the weather, we'll dump him over. Tell them he fell over the side when he was drunk. They'll believe us."
She gave him a look of respect and something else. He didn't know what. Despite the heavy weather, she conducted a quick search and dragged out Karpov's heavy tackle kit.
"Will this do?"
Color had returned to her face, and she no longer shivered. She only held the rail with one hand and didn't watch her feet. Grisha decided she was a natural sailor.
"Open it. He brought that on board. I want to see what's in it."
Valerie grabbed the halibut club and brought it down on the kit with a crash. The broken padlock skittered across the deck. She unsnapped the clasps and threw the lid open. Oily metal glistened from the box.
"What the hell?" Grisha said.
Valerie pulled out a gleaming pistol, twisted it about while she examined it, and released the rail to pull the slide open to look into the chamber. She had handled weapons before. Grisha felt his stomach drop. Other pistols rested in the box.
"Kartikov, 9mm, she announced. "Holds a clip of 7 rounds, accurate up to 20 meters. An excellent weapon."
Over the last 7 years, Grisha had carried many illegal items on his boat, but never this. He had 2 rifles locked in their rack down in the main cabin. But pistols?
"Do you know what they do to you if they catch you with an unauthorized handgun?"
Grisha asked, horror in his voice.
"They take your dominant hand off at the wrist."
She looked at him for a long moment, then returned the pistol to the box and shut it.
"Where's the rope?"
Grisha pointed to another locker.
"In there. But for now, just hang on."
The boat dropped heavily into another trough as he worked his way toward land. 2. 4 days earlier. It didn't take Grisha long to realize this was the charter trip from hell. He'd puzzled at it ever since the broker called to book boat and skipper for a 5-day fishing trip to New Archangel, the capital of Russian America, 300 miles west. Most fishermen arrived at the dock the same time he did, eager to pursue the chavich, or Chinook salmon, or the monstrous halibut that could grow larger than a barn door. Grisha had arrived just after sunrise. The summer sun hung 2 hand-widths above tree-covered Mount Robert when he finally spied the big man lumbering toward him down the dock. The client dressed like a fisherman, complete with trolling pole and tackle kit, but he walked like a Cossack. Arrogantly precise, in a ruler straight line, and exuding the certainty he owned the world. At the edge of the dock, he stopped and stared into Grisha's eyes, spoke Russian.
You are Charter Captain Grigory Grigoryevich, yes?
Yes, Grisha replied in English. Are you my charter to New Archangel?
The man casually threw his tackle kit over the gunwale. When Grisha caught it, he nearly collapsed with the surprising weight of the locked metal box. The man climbed on deck and looked around.
You have Wodka on board?
Grisha glanced at the chronometer in the console. It was 8:30 in the morning. Stale sweat and bowel gas eddied around the large man, who dropped into the other seat bolted to the bridge deck. Grisha watched the man look around at his nautical surroundings, obviously for the first time. So what was in the tackle box? This was obviously a smuggling run, and would provide much more money at the end of the trip than previously agreed.
Yes, and beer. Even some California whiskey.
The man regarded Grisha with baleful, piggish eyes.
That is against the Tsar's law, unless you have paid the duty, of course.
Of course.
Grisha suppressed a grin while stowing the tackle box, which he estimated at 10 kilos, with his own fishing gear.
Like this walrus ever worried about duty taxes.
Maintaining a professional mien, he slipped over the side onto the dock.
We're late. I'll get us underway.
Quickly, he untied both lines and stepped back aboard. Grisha edged the boat into gear and eased the throttle forward.
Do you have a name?
Other than Pig Eyes.
The boat gently left the slip and angled toward the channel. A warm breeze rippled the water, and the sky stretched bereft of clouds as far as the eye could see. A charter skipper couldn't ask for better omens.
I am Karpov. How long does it take to get to Tangus?
Depends on how much fishing we do on the way, and how fast we go.
Grisha snapped his head around and stared at Karpov.
Wait a minute. I thought we were going to New Archangel.
There has been a change of plans. I wish to go to Tangus, Karpov said. We will fish on the way back. At maximum speed, how long will it take us to get there?
Today and 2 more days if we don't run into bad weather. If you're in a hurry, why don't you fly?
I enjoy the sea air. Where is the vodka?
In the galley.
Grisha motored slowly past the harbor patrol, careful not to show any wake. So far, he wasn't making all that much on this run, and a fine would put him in the hole, as well as add stamps to his license. Collect enough stamps, and the license disappears. He loved the symmetry of Russian law. Karpov disappeared into the cabin. Grisha decided he had a smuggler on his hands. Smuggling paid a lot better than charter fishing trips, so he would wait patiently for the proposal. A ruble was a ruble, what the hell? His wife's face flashed through his mind, and he slapped the wheel. No time for that now.
It's either better when I return or it's over.
Small, angry teeth bit inside his gut. They chewed at him a great deal these days. He felt pissed at himself.
Sorry I slapped you, he murmured to the wheel. I was aiming for someone else.
Do you Creoles talk to yourselves all the time?
Karpov asked as he clumped up out of the galley. The bottle of vodka looked small in his wide, beefy hand.
I talk to my boat when the notion strikes me, he said, edging his words with a glint of steel.
Grisha forced himself calm. This wasn't the old days, even if Kazina didn't want him anymore. But if this tub of suet kept up this Creole crap, there would be trouble.
You need some diversion on your boat for your passengers. Perhaps a Creole woman, eh?
Karpov laughed and drank from the bottle. Grisha ground his teeth. It was going to be a long trip. The boat burbled past the breakwater and into Aku Channel. He pushed the throttle forward. Pravda's cutwater surged up onto the step, that portion of the boat where the V of the hull flattens into a plane for moving at high speed, and raced cleanly toward the distant tip of Douglas Island. Grisha thought it humorous that an island in Russian America bore the name of an English religious leader, but custom in the old days of exploration decreed that all nations would honor the wish of whomever named it first. British Captain George Vancouver had accurately finished what his former skipper, Captain James Cook, had started, and charted the entire southeast Alaska coast in the 1790s, before Imperial Russia completely dominated the region. The constant rumble of stamp mills faded behind Pravda. They passed the whaling station on the island, scaring up a part of the large flock of seagulls scavenging scraps. The station's stench caught them for an instant, before the boat burst through the invisible miasma.
"Smells like the Creole part of town," Karpov said.
Abruptly, Grisha pulled the throttle back to neutral, and Pravda's bow dipped with the sudden loss of power. The boat drifted.
"Why do you stop?"
"There will be an understanding before I go any farther. I am the captain and owner of this boat. You are my passenger. Despite the fact that my father was a poor Russian laborer and my mother was a kolosh, you will show me the respect you would for any citizen, especially a boat captain. If you do not, I will return you to port so you can find a different charter to take you south."
"That would not be a smart thing for you to do. You would miss making a great deal of money. Also, your license might be forfeit.
And your superior might ask many questions why I brought you back. Perhaps he has relatives who are Creole, or works with them. The Tsar's U case of 1968 said there would be no more prejudice because of one's birthright. That's 19 years also. You should have heard about it by now. I don't want any more bigoted shit from you."
Karpov's squinting eyes receded even further into his face as he took another long drink.
"Drive your boat. I will say no more about your unfortunate station in life."
As the beefy Russian lifted the bottle to his lips, Grisha pushed the throttle forward. Pravda reared like a Cossack's horse and charged across the water. Karpov rocked back in his chair, and vodka spilled down his neck and jacket front.
"You dung-eating you ass!" Karpov shouted. "I would punish you for that, but for the fact I need to get to Tangus as soon as possible."
Grisha ignored him. A smile flickered at the edge of his mouth. More bullshit. If he wanted to get south as soon as possible, he would have hired a small boat. His practiced eyes swept over the instrument panel, and his mind ticked off the levels, amperage, RPM, and hull speed without actually thinking about them. Kazina's face occupied his thoughts. Her dark hair framed the high cheeks and nearly jade eyes. Lilacs always attended her. When they were married just under 6 years ago, he knew fortune had finally smiled on him. She epitomized the crowning accomplishment of his climb back from the lowest strata of the Tsar's American possession. The illiterate son of serfs, his father married a kolosh woman of the Kutznewu people from Admiralty Island. As a Creole, a person of mixed race, Grisha found himself equally shunned by the children of low-caste Russians, as well as by the children of the Auk and Taku kolosh, including his own cousins. At an early age, he learned the three essentials of survival: a quick mind, lightning fists, and fast feet. After leaving the priest school at 14, he crewed on a fishing boat. At 17, he developed into a handsome combination of the ethnicities he represented. Grisha's virginity went to a pretty barmaid during an equinox party. Women in every port of the Alexander Archipelago watched for him. His other idea of a good time usually involved a drunken fight, after which his opponent had to be carried away. One night, the fight was with his own skipper. Grisha won the fight, but lost his berth. The next morning, he joined the Troika Guard, the Russian Foreign Legion. Originally, all the officers were Russian, but that had slowly changed over the years. However, all the enlisted were either minority races from the vast Russian Empire or foreigners. Never before had he been challenged on every level of his being, nor felt the degree of camaraderie as he did in the Guard. The Russian army was a political beast complete with intrigue whose genesis went back centuries. The Troika Guard was tough, demanding, and received all the hard, dirty jobs. In essence, they were mercenary troops, which suited Grisha just fine. He loved the Troika Guard. Starting as a sub-private, he learned quickly, and rapidly made his way upward to command sergeant in less than 5 years. His men loved him. At the age of 25, he received a battlefield commission, as well as the Imperial Order of Valor, second highest decoration the Russian Empire awarded her soldiers and sailors. 4 years later came French Algeria and dishonor. His loathing of the Russian government began then, and grew steadily over the years. Dealing with the day-to-day officiousness of Russian America gnawed at him, but like all other non-Russian residents, he endured. The mustering out money bought him his home and his boat, but cost him his self-respect. He started over, going back to the things he had learned before he had killed his first man. He returned to the life he knew before the Troika Guard, fiercely holding on to the freedom of being his own boss. After a couple years fishing, smuggling, and building up a charter business, he met Kazina at a party. She was a 26-year-old bookkeeper with the Russian America Company. Her extraordinary beauty lured him. Her intelligence hooked him. She made it plain she was on her way up and had no interest in a has-been. He pointed out that he worked for himself and made a good living. They married when he was 32, still the master of Pravda, a 10-meter fishing boat. He rigged the boat for sport fishing, which had turned into big business along the inside passage. Financial opportunities also occurred for skippers who knew how to lade cargo quietly and get out of port quickly. At 39, he could pass for a man 10 years younger. Wiry and lean, with the exception of a slight paunch, he stood almost 2 meters and possessed open good looks that still attracted women who appreciated adventure. Now, after 6, almost 7 years of marriage, Kazina seemed distant. Grisha's past attempts to interact with her friends always came off stiff and wooden. None of them were Creole. He detected, or expected, their silent racism, and ceased his efforts. The marriage had been on the ebb for some time before tall blonde Commander Fedorov knocked on their door with an imperial order for lodging an officer of the Tsar. Grisha's small chart room became the sacrifice for the officer's comfort and fanned the embers of his anger at the government. But the sudden animation he perceived in Kazina proved the heaviest burden. Until Fedorov arrived, Grisha entertained hope that he could find compromise with his beautiful wife. But she hadn't even said goodbye when he left for this charter. As a commander of troops, he had learned the necessity of cutting one's losses. But this was much harder. The tiny teeth bit so hard in his stomach that he groaned aloud.
"Go ahead. Talk to your boat," Karpov said with a slur in his voice. "I'm going to take a nap. Wake me when the evening meal is prepared."
As the burly man staggered down the steps into the cabin, Grisha steered sharply around imaginary flotsam, knowing the Cossack would lose his balance in the narrow passageway. He heard Karpov crash into the companionway bulkhead.
"Damn your black ass!"
Karpov's voice was muffled by distance and engine noise. Grisha smiled, trying to make it a victory. 2 days later, after pounding south at his top speed of 24 knots.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?